welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. Huh?
Hey, very good.
29th of December.
It's our last show of 2024.
2024 is almost over.
Yep.
Headed into year 15 next year. Holy cow. So, my name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Well, Bill, how was your week?
Well, it was quite nice. We had a wonderful Christmas, and it's been weather's been a little damp, but that's okay. It's that time of year. We expect that.
We had multiple Christmases.
That's right.
Just admit it. Just kept happening over and over and over. People came, they visited, they went home. New people came, they visited, they went home.
Yep. And then we visited, and we went home.
So I hope you guys had a good time out there. Let's see. You can find all of our shows back 14 and some odd years at wethepeopleradio.us. If you have ideas for programs, if you have ideas for guests, I read the best, Substack yesterday posting, and she's a friend of our guest today, and I tell you what, got to just twist her arm and get her on here. She's really a writer, doesn't really want to do speaking stuff, but I tell you what, her stuff is fantastic. It's that Jennifer Bilek, the same gal that I read about all this transgender stuff back in, I don't know, 2018 or something. She was the one who got me kind of smartened up on it, and she has an amazing article in there. I listed it. For today, what's it called? It was so good, I forgot what it was called, but it was excellent. I know why. Okay, so I'm having a little spaz attack here. I'll stop having a spaz attack. Our guest is Sharon Byrne, and here we go. Here's the article. It was really, I mean, it's really worth discussing. How trans activists, this was another guy, Jonathan Van Meren, how trans activists won the election for Trump. That kind of caught my eye. And then the other one I'll post right after. I saw that too late last night. So Sharon has been with us a few times. She is a nonprofit and government relations expert. Can't have too many of those, because honestly, when it comes to nonprofit and government, we want all the good guys being experts, and the bad guys have been kind of running the show for a while. She's got 2 decades of advocacy leadership experience and brings to WOLF, the Women's Liberation Front, vital community building experience and connections. She currently serves as the president of the Santa Barbara United Nations Association and served as a delegate to the UN Conference on the Status of Women and Women and Gender Equality Forums. She's the author of multiple published articles on women's rights, including an op-ed in The Independent revealing the insidious presence of human trafficking in Santa Barbara. Also serves on the board of the Santa Barbara Women's Health Coalition and has been a vocal advocate for women's reproductive sovereignty. And she has been the executive director of the Women's Liberation Front, or WOLF, since 2023, actually. And you wouldn't think we would have a huge amount in common, but we have a huge amount in common.
We do.
We do have a huge amount in common. Isn't that funny? I'll never forget that one. When Lloyd Beardsmore was like, you should interview my friend Sharon. She's the head of the Women's Liberation Front. I'm all, doesn't really sound like my kind of thing. Sounds kind of scary and militant and like women's libby. And then it was like, oh, I get it. I don't know. It's so funny. I ask people about it all the time. And they always think it's like part of the 1960s bra-burning kind of thing. And I'm like, no. It's much more modern than that.
Un contraire.
Yeah, un contraire. But I won't ball it up by telling people about your organization. I'm going to let you do that, Sharon. I only tell people about Sharon, and then Sharon tells people about the rest.
It is, you know, politics always creates the strangest of bedfellows, eh?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
We are in that sort of a time when a lot of times there is a lot of chitter-chatter back and forth, particularly between, I would say, populists and conservatives. And radical feminists, and you would, again, not think those three would step into a bar and have anything to say to each other, but they really do, because a lot of radical feminists are very disturbed over the way that progressive feminism has kind of hijacked the narrative and said, you know, Everybody else, you know, to the front of the queue, women to the back, and we're like, well, wait, what? You know, like, why is this good, right? And so, and of course, we're all bigots now, you know, because we're transphobic, et cetera. And I would laugh at that because I am arachnophobic. I will tell you, if I see a spider, and I've gotten better about it.
That you'll admit to.
You do have some phobic
totally
in there.
Admit to that, right? Absolutely, right? And I'm better now. I go and capture them in a glass and put them outside, you know, and let them go on their merry way. But, you know, normally I have this sort of heaving revulsion at the look of them. And that, you know, phobia is an irrational fear. I am not irrationally afraid, you know, of transgenders. What I am upset about is the way that it creates an absolute direct conflict with women's rights, and it didn't need to do any of that. So that is where the radical feminists show up, and they're also pissed off at progressivism, period. I don't know if you saw it, Aaron, but the Wall Street Journal ran an article a couple days ago basically saying that the era of progressive politics in the United States is now over.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, it's like anything else, right? You give... You know, it's the expression we've had forever, right? Give them enough rope and they'll hang themselves. And I think that's what happened. They sort of thought they could run the tables, you know. We're going to make you do this, and we're going to make you do that, we're going to make you do the other thing. And everybody went, you know what? I think I'm done having you run me around.
Really, well, and it's interesting, and again, it's where you see this sort of mashup between people who normally wouldn't have a lot to say to each other, right? And that is that the first thing that, I guess, turned a lot of people off. And by the way, this is happening globally. It's not just a U.S. phenomenon. But one of the first things that turned people off was this idea that, you know, their job was somehow causing some remote island to sink into the waves, right, with climate change. And they were like, wait, what?
Yeah.
You know, and I need lentils, and I need to ride my bike, and, you know, and why? You know, that some of the climate change policies cease to make any kind of sense. Right, even progressives at some point. The second thing that really has killed it, and you're seeing some evidence of that now in the UK, is identity politics. And I would certainly say that had a huge part of it in the United States, right? That what you see is a lot of populists and a lot of conservatives and again, radical feminists teaming up and saying, you know, this identity politics thing, it went too far. You know, and now it makes no sense. It just makes no sense. So that bothered people. And then the third thing that really bothered people, and again, these are, you can put them in a conservative slot or a MAGA slot or even a radical feminist slot or just, you know, the average person, was unchecked immigration has consequences.
Yeah.
And the people pushing it haven't really been experiencing those consequences, right? And so, so you've seen a lot of it. I've seen it in the UK quite a bit. You know, my family's all UK-based, and of course today Mom and I are, you know, continuing our Christmas tradition with a wholly American, not really, English cottage pie, right? We're making one for my daughter to come over for dinner. But
what exactly is a cottage pie?
Ooh, so you've heard of them, probably a shepherd's pie.
They come with potatoes, is what I'm seeing. The Irish,
exactly.
loves that. That's where we cross over. We're like, what, you put potatoes on your stew? Oh, that's exciting.
Right. So my British mom's in, you know, making one of those for the holiday tradition here. But yeah, you see this is happening in a lot of places, in Canada, Australia, England. You know, Spain has had a go with this earlier this year. The German government just collapsed for similar reasons, right? So Macron's barely got a majority together still in France, similar problem. So kind of what I think is happening globally is what happened here in November, which is, you know, kind of a smash back against progressivism and saying, you have gone too far and you've lost the plot. It's not progress anymore. You've gone regressive now, you know, and we got to go do something else.
Well, when you're holding people accountable, I mean, like we were all told when we were kids, right? You can't blame people for things they can't control. Color, you know, you can't blame someone for what color they were born. They didn't get to choose. And that always made sense. As a kid, not only was it not right to discriminate against people, but, you know, I remember my mom saying, you know, no one can help that. You can't help that. They can't help that. And it's kind of like, oh, yeah, that's a good point. And now we're being blamed. We're all the wrong color. And I think there comes a point where people are like, yeah, you know, you can't blame me for that either. Yeah.
Yes, and unfortunately, not only do they blame you, but it was quite pejorative, right? So, Aaron, you horrible,
that's true.
You know, white, colonizing, you know, woman. I mean, like, it went really in some awful directions. I think there's also across the world, again, we've seen this in the United States, increasingly since George Bush's administration, is a rising authoritarianism. So authoritarianism kind of sucks no matter who's in charge, right? But we all got a good up and close look at progressive authoritarianism. And, you know, it's basically you will, right? You know, you will do these things. You will eat lentils. You will ride bikes. You will, you know, you will let men into women's prisons. You will do these things, and you will believe that they are women. And at that point, you know, I think even, like I say, even the most liberal-minded person would be like, now look, you know, that you went too far. And that's where the feminist, you know, the radical feminist started selling up saying, sorry, could have gone with you on some other things, but men are not women. Cut it out. And at that point, you know, we all went to war. So it's been a very strange ride and a lot of developments. It's been a minute since I've talked to you. There's been quite a few massive developments. Well, I guess, you know, starting with sort of the top ones, right? You know that there was a big case at the Supreme Court, right, in December. And it was Scarametti, the United States versus Scarametti. Did you know about that case?
No. So you'll have to tell us. I'm going to assume that if we did hear about it, I don't know, I slept since then and stuff, and then there was the whole Santa intervention and the travel.
You'd have been into this one. This was the state of Tennessee, and of course the Attorney General is Mrs. Scarametti. You have to defend Tennessee's law. They passed a ban on allowing surgeries and procedures that would, you know, basically butcher a kid into, you know, believing they were the opposite sex. Anybody under 18, those were banned. The United States brought the lawsuit. The Biden administration, you know, and some families brought the lawsuit. So, we weighed in with an amicus brief. And that case was heard in December. And I don't know what the Supreme Court's going to do. I'm hoping they're not going to overturn Tennessee's ban, because I think pretty much everybody that's still normal, sane, and rational would agree that, you know, any kid who's experiencing any kind of problems with puberty should not be immediately rushed off to the butcher shop and have either their breasts cut off and put on testosterone if they're girls, or have their dicks cut off and put on estrogen if they're boys. I think we would all agree that this is not smart. We should not be doing this to our children. So we'll see if the Tennessee ban is upheld. There are other states that have done similar bans, and of course you could see, you know, perhaps a national ban being introduced under the incoming administration. So that was exciting.
Well, because there's no the thing with that is there's no it's not a well let's see how that works out. I mean, this is a one and done. You don't get to go back on that.
No, it's not like getting a tattoo that you can get lasered off later, right? Or letting the piercing close up. This will ruin you for life. That if you take cross-sex hormones as a young person, you know, you run the risk, especially if you're a male, of going into osteoporosis by 20, you know, and ruining your skeleton and sterilization. You're right. You can't just reverse this. I mean, if a woman cuts off her breast, you can't just go, they don't just grow back. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is...
Yeah, know, or you have, you know, you have a hysterectomy. Because now you think you want to be a man, and then all of a sudden you become 18, 19. I mean, they're doing this to little girls. You become a kind of a grown-up, I guess, you know, at some point. And you think, well, you meet some nice person, and you think, well, I think I'd like to have kids. Oops. There's no going back on that.
No, there isn't. You know, we weighed on a bill in the California legislature this year, AB 1955, and it was a pretty heinous bill. Our friend Aaron Friday, you know, said, you got to weigh in on this. So I did. And part of the bill you can understand, and part of the bill you're like, what? So the bill was basically punishment by the state of California to these school districts. You know, we've had some school board elections, right? And a lot of America's cultural battleground has moved to the school districts. So in some parts of California, there have been some elections and some school districts that said, hey, you know, we think that if a child is starting to identify as the opposite sex in school, and if they are starting to want to use different pronouns for themselves and maybe even starting to get counseling to go on meds, then we should notify the parents. And so the state was like, oh, hell no, you don't. So they wrote this bill, and the bill basically forbids school districts from notifying the parent if the child is identifying as lesbian, gay, or transgender. Now, when we wrote about this bill and submitted our position was, look, we can understand that in some homes, it might not be really a safe space for a child to admit that they have a different sexual orientation. We understand that. And, you know, the child can keep that to themselves, you know, until they're 18 and then have an adult discussion with their parents. That makes sense to us. But when your child is identifying as transgender and pretending that they are now either a middle gender or the opposite sex or whatever other nonsense got put in their head, that puts the kid on the path to medicalization and surgeries and hormones and irreversible damage. And absolutely, a parent must know. I mean, absolutely, you know, a parent has every right to know that that's the path that their kid is being put on. Well, of course, the bill passed in full form and was signed into law. And, you know, what do you think? It'll take Rob Bonta, what, 5 minutes to bring the first lawsuit against the school district that disobeys, right? So,
yeah.
You know, our state, this is why progressivism, I think, is dying this horrible death, is that we're not learning. We're doubling down, right? Like, we're not taking a pause and going, hey, people don't seem to like this. Maybe we should rethink this. Maybe we should look at that. No, they're doubling down and they're getting very authoritarian. And I think that was part of the stomach turning of this election.
I think so too, because you had parents, you know, especially people who had gotten divorced, and you had that one poor guy in Texas, I think, and the mom is trying to turn his young son into a girl.
Yeah.
And make life changing decisions without the dad. And I know you know more about it than I do, but didn't the court decide that she could do it?
Yes, they did. And you just can't, like, these are like those headlines that you can't unsee them once you've seen them, right? But you're like, can this really be happening? And
yeah.
The answer was, oh, it absolutely is happening. And you think, a Texas of all cases, right? But no, she moved the kid out of state. Right? And so that, and he was trying to stop that because he knew this was exactly what was going to happen. And he's, I think, been even barred from seeing the kid.
Once that kind of thing starts happening, all of a sudden people start looking at, like, oh, wait, that could happen to me. Like, that could happen to, if you're a grandparent, that could happen to your grandchild. And figure that out pretty quick.
Yeah. Very much so, right? I mean, that is so, and, you know, I'm a mom, and there's just nothing you could say to me that would make me march my daughter into any doctor's office to have her breast off. There's just nothing. But my understanding is some of the physicians that are really into this, right, really caught up in it, and the pharmaceutical companies, they pressure the crap out of the parents. You know, and they're like, would you rather have a dead, you know, son or trans or kid, right?
Hey, you know, we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, could you give a couple of stats on that? Because that is always thrown in everyone's face. And, you know, if you don't spend a lot of time dealing with this, or you really don't have anyone in your family, and this is a kind of a tangential issue for you, like, you think, well, gosh, you know, I wouldn't want that to happen. But how likely is that? When we come back with our guest, Sharon Byrne, who is the executive director of WOLF, the Women's Liberation Front, you're going to all find out what TERFs are, by the way. We're going to leave that just as a little cliffhanger for you. If you haven't heard our program before on this sort of topic, you're going to learn about that, too. You'll have a good time, too. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them? Your neighborhood, they take over, but good. They want you all body and soul, then it's just your body, then they go. What shall we do about them?
Make a really good girl. These girls, though, still kind of look like a guy. Never thought to wonder why. If I could pull this off, would I know for certain the real situation behind the curtain? It's so beautiful. Damsel in distress, not exactly natural.
Where the heck Did you find that one?
Some lady named Suzanne Vega sang that song.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Huh.
I picked my favorite part. I've had it in there. I have a whole folder, you'll be happy to know, Sharon. It's just music for shows on transgender issues, by the way.
You picked a good one.
Yeah. So that was I've never heard of Suzanne Vega, Suzanne with a Z. But it was a pretty funny song, As Girls Go. I was like, oh, wow, she kind of hit that nail on the head there. So they do always tell us, oh, if you don't let this six-year-old become a girl or become a boy or whatever, then they're going to, you know, throw themselves off the tallest whatever. Is that happening a lot?
No, and, you know, a little 101 advocacy, progressive advocacy might be useful here, which is whatever issue, you know, one of the old rules of liberalism is that you talk loudly and carry a small victim before you, right? That's how you do
okay.
advocacy. Okay, so, you know, if you're trying very hard to convince the world that kids must be allowed to transition, the best thing you can do is tell everybody that they're going to commit suicide if you don't let them do it. Now, you know, adolescence is always a difficult journey. Nobody has an easy ride of it, right? Everybody's bodies kind of weird them out. The attention that you get as your body develops kind of freaks you out if you're a girl. You're like, whoa, what happened to, you know, I was playing tomboy with these guys like 5 minutes ago, and now all of a sudden they're looking at me weird and giggling, right? Like, it's all very awkward. And, you know, I've raised German Shepherd dogs. German Shepherds go through, like, this adolescence where they're just goofy. You know, their ears are too long, their paws are too big, they can't move correct. You know, like, it takes a minute, right, as you mature into your adult body. So, yeah, the anxiety around this and the absolute drive for social acceptance is paramount when you're a kid. The peer pressure is intense. So I do think that there are some kids that do struggle with this at any rate. And when they're promised this magic exit door, which is, oh, what's different about you is you're born in the wrong body. We just need to fix your body and make it the right body, and we'll just turn you into the opposite sex. By the way, this was the punishment for homosexuality in Iran, right? That, you know, Iran cannot handle that people might be homosexual, so if they discover that you are, they will put you through a series of procedures to turn you into the opposite sex, because that is apparently less abominable to Allah than you being homosexual. So we're taking this very barbaric practice and pitching it to kids. And, of course, you know, NPR will run the story, right, of, oh, my goodness, you know, kids are 72% more likely to commit suicide or attempt suicide after, you know, a transgender surgery ban on kids passes in their state. How did they find that out? Who gave them those stats? That would be the advocates, right, that are pushing for this to be true. So we have not really been able to find good survey data that indicates that every time, you know, we tell you, no, you can't magically become the opposite sex, that you're automatically going to go rush to commit suicide. But we do know that, you know, adolescence is really kind of already fraught with peril, and that adolescence in particular, you know, those under 25, your brains are not finished forming. And what finishes the development process is intense socialization. So the need for social acceptance is incredibly high, right, among young people. Remember, you know, like, they always want to be, you know, socializing with each other. They're sort of biologically driven to it. And so I think that when there's something put in front of them that looks as easy as buying a new pair of shoes, and believe me, you know, the transgender procedures are pitched to them like it's going to be so easy, it's going to be a nothing burger. And, you know, then that's denied to them. They feel like some door has been shut of, this was how I was going to get social acceptance, and now it's been shut. We've also heard from a lot of individuals, particularly the women, who have come out of this craziness. They were taking testosterone. They may have cut their breasts off. And in their early 20s, they realized this is all bollocks, and they've come out of it. And they said that one of the things that happened to them was when they announced that they might be trans, and they were trying on that they might be trans like the way one tries on a pair of earrings, that they got love bombed and told, oh, this is amazing, you're going to be wonderful, and it's going to be great, you're going to love your... In other words, they were, like, promised this stairway to heaven, almost. And so, yeah, these pressures are huge. The marketing is very, very powerful. And, you know, when they do detransition and say, no, that wasn't for me, they get hatred. And
I bet that's just the ugliest. Well, but the other thing, too, is that a lot of... the stats on the transgender community from the suicide standpoint for the people who've actually done it is quite high. I mean, you have a lot.
Yeah.
Not the little kids, but just in general. So I don't know if we've talked to different people, but you know, so there's a couple schools of thought. One is, well, they had, you know, they really should have been under some psychiatric care to start with, and never got that kind of help. And the other one is they just, all the drugs and the surgery and all that stuff just snapped them.
Yeah, there was a story this morning, actually, about a person who killed themselves in 2009. You know, I think they offed themselves in 2015. It was a girl who was born into a family that already had three boys. The mother was profoundly disappointed that this was a girl. She was not a pretty girl. Her brother started sexually abusing her at an early age, and in her teenagerhood, she was like, "That's it. This is a British girl, by the way. She's like, "That's it. I'm going to become a man. This is how I'm going to find my social acceptance." Went through two failed surgeries to create a false penis, right? Two failed. And, you know, was really disheartened by the whole thing, had a lot of health issues, and then finally committed suicide. And so, yeah, these don't lead to happy endings, right? This isn't, again, we're selling you some cosmetic surgery and some hormones and making you think that this is how you're going to change sex. Humans cannot change sex. Never been done. It will never be done. And so it's all a giant fallacy, but the fact that we're selling it to young people, it's criminal. It's criminal.
Yeah, they can't process that. Well, and the other little piece of it too is if you are it was interesting because my 14-year-old granddaughter who lives in Maine made a comment about it over Christmas that she was just so sick of the, I don't know what she called them, but the group of people that all want to be trans or bi or this or that or whatever the thing is. And it was the kids that never got along with anybody anyway. And so now they're demanding special privileges because they are now part of a protected class.
Yeah, now that I think was the greatest trick of all. And again, it's a progressive trick, right? Let's create a new marginalized class of people, vault them over everybody else, make everybody accommodate them. You know, give them extra special, you know, status, declare them, you know, at imminent risk of death, you know, and then, you know, everybody wants to now. Again, the identity politics, I think, was the problem here. That, you know, I remember the diversity training of the late 90s, and it was wonderful. The idea was really good. It was like, you know what? Many heads can often be better than a few heads. You want a diversity of viewpoint so that you don't screw up and make the wrong decision. People could see things that you can't see. And so it's, well, you know, you should welcome some different thought. Okay, that sounds good to me. I'm all about enlightenment. Let's do it. And that quickly morphed into, yes, but you see, I'm half Chinese, half black, and all gay, and you can't possibly understand me. And so the whole, first, the embrace of different ideas quickly became this dividing line where, you know, special groups were extra special, and no one could understand them, but they all needed to be vaulted into high positions. That led to DEI, which has been thoroughly trounced now, right, and pushed back. So one of the things my daughter said to me that was very interesting was she said, you know, we're all being taught that everybody's a hateful white colonizer these days, and the last thing you want to do is be one of those. So here comes this new group that you can just magically identify into, and now you'll be special and protected. And so it's a new identity that is very attractive, and again, very marketed, that somehow you're extra special and different because you're non-binary or, you know, even gay is not good enough now. Being gay and lesbian is not even nearly good enough now. You've got to be one of these myriad genders or furry gender or, you know, you've got to be some pansexual. You've got to be one of these new terms that they come up with, you know, sort of every 5 minutes. Being good old gay is not even good enough now.
It is every 5 minutes because I have somebody who sends me gender of the week every Friday. who I may or may not work with, and I'm like, come on, there can't be this many, and yeah, there really are. But I really, the thing with all of this, okay, it's kind of crazy. It doesn't affect everybody, so you know, you have a lot of people who think, well, I don't care what everybody's doing, let them all go do whatever they want. Which is fine. I mean, I guess I feel like that too. Like, if you want to go do crazy stuff like that, go ahead. But when two things, like, you know, when your kid thinks they're a pirate, and I, somebody says this, who is it? Matt? What's his face? Who's a woman? Matt? You know what I mean? That guy? God, why can't I think of his name? Anyway, and he says, yeah, like, if my kid thinks he's a pirate, I don't go poke his eye out and chop his head, his leg off and give him a crutch, like, and an eye patch. Like, the pirate phase comes and goes. Like, I don't actually make him look like one. And Matt Walsh. And I thought, oh, that's actually an excellent point.
It's a brilliant point. But he's also pointing to what kids will do, and we want them to do.
Yeah.
Play.
Try on different stuff.
Play. Yeah. I mean, when you're young, you know, Carl Jung, the famous psychologist, knew, and so did Freud, that the ego takes a minute to form. And again, in today's terms, we would say that your brain physiology is not finished all of its development until age 25, which is why the military loves to get you when you're 18, because you got no concept of death or maiming. You have zero idea that
yeah.
happens. You just can't believe, you can't comprehend it because your brain's not done forming, right? So what you want young people to do, and we, you know, encourage them to do, and I think we were encouraged to do, you try stuff on. You know, you try this on. You try living in that city. You try this job. You try that degree program. You try things on.
Well, it used to be like, you know, you grew bangs. You know, you cut your hair. Like, you did things that were completely, like, not permanent. Different, what do you call it? Different styles, you know, different clothes and different stuff like that. But this idea that you can permanently change into someone else. And I'm not sure how do these guys, how are they able to really bury the idea that you cannot? I mean, do you think they really believe that you can become a woman, or is this whole pretend thing? They just are demanding we believe it.
That's a very good question.
I mean, we have a chromosomal, like, I mean, it's just basic biology.
Yeah, no, you asked a really good question. And, this, you know, and again, our friend Bialik is really good. You made me think about something. You know, when I was about, I don't know, 14 or 15, I got a little radicalized when I went on a trip to the UK. And, you know, I got a punk haircut, you know, put pink highlights in it, you know, pierce my nose, you know, and wore safety pins, and, you know, did all kinds of grungy stuff that you do when you're, you know, 14 and going to be a punk, right? But, you know, it all grew out, and it turned out all right. You know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's just stuff you try on,
yeah,
right?
You didn't,
you know,
cut your nose off. You just stabbed something in it temporarily.
Yeah, they closed up, right? You know, and, you know, I wore grungy boots, and, you know, I ran around with anarchy signs and all of that, right? So, like, that's what you do. But, you know, by 16, I was out of that. You know, that was just, it came and went very quickly, right? And that, again, that's what you sort of want to do. So you ask this good question on how's it getting marketed, who's doing the marketing? Okay, who's driving it? Which Bialik has been really good at pointing out and laying the breadcrumbs for us to follow. Is billionaire fetishists that you used to call transvestites. And no, they don't think they're actually women. Actually, they get off sexually on being men with full-on penises dressed in women's clothes. What they want is to do their fetish out in public. And that is what spawned all of this trans ideology. That is what spawned it. And unfortunately, it went terrible directions, particularly, I think, in the direction of the girls. What the girls quickly spied was, wow, womanhood looks really crappy. I'm going to grow up. I'm going to get raped. I'm going to be ran through. I'm going to be only good for sex. And if I'm not married and having babies by 25, I'm past the sell-by date. You know, like, all the stuff coming out of the manosphere is particularly toxic to the young women. They watch one episode of porn, and they realize that, you know, here's what's in store for you, choking an anal pairing. Great. You know, like, some girls are going to be like, I want out of this. And so they don't seek to become men as much as they seek to become theys and get out of whatever womanhood has got on offer.
Isn't that terrible? Because it used to be, you know, you were going to kind of grow up and be June Cleaver, which looked sort of scary, so you figured you could probably get out of wearing the dress every day, but it didn't look terrifying and it didn't look horrible. I'm not sure when we started making being, I thought it was getting better. I don't know, I must have missed that part where being, you know, being a woman looks so horrible that you just wanted to skip it. But I'm really curious too, this whole thing seems to be much more focused on men pretending to be women than women pretending to be men. Dang it, we have to take another break. But when we come back, because the prison thing, and we kind of buried the lead on that for you, we need to go back to that. We don't have men pretending to be, or, you know, women pretending to be men so they can go into the men's side of the prison. Nobody's doing that. It's a very one-sided sort of push that we're into, and I'm curious to know if you're seeing that go away or get worse, I guess. So, the weather forecast on transgender will be happening when we return. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Yes. Been a lot of that going on.
Yes, Johnny Lang wrote a whole song about it. So Sharon, it seems to be really, when you get into the whole transgender deal and the problem parts of it, not the private life. I mean, if you want to mess up your kids or yourself or whatever, I don't think people are looking to necessarily become involved in that, although I think we're going to kind of have to because we're paying for it. But it's mostly men encroaching on women's space. It's not really going the other way, is it?
No, which is where the radical feminists stood up, right? So this is when the conservatives, the radical feminists, started having conversations. Because who didn't notice anything was men. If they noticed something, they were like, you know, it seems to be a lot of characters crowding up under that LGBT umbrella, but I'm not part of that, so I'm not going to pay attention, right? Like, not my shtick. I'm going to stay out of it. Seeing the political is always the personal. But the first one to raise the alarm was lesbians. And, of course, there's a tiny, tiny number of lesbians. There are even fewer lesbians than there are gay men. And so no one was really listening to them. But here's what they were saying. There are men showing up at my dating app. And they are putting on lipstick and looking absolutely bloody hideous. And they're insisting that they're women and that I must date them or it's transphobic. And that I will learn to love girl dick. So you almost feel like a lot of these transvestites got in the back room somewhere and had a conversation with each other and say, we'll just say that trans women are women, and we'll drop the transvestite part.
What is the difference?
Take a new angle.
Right? So it's interesting. You know, we should study this someday for history, because this was the most successful infiltration I have ever seen. In the old Diagnostics and Statistics Manual, you know, that psychologists use. Transvestism and transsexualism were considered mental illnesses. And transsexualism, almost 1,000%, applied to males who wanted to release their inborn female, and some of them went through horrible, botched, terrible surgeries, you know, lots of experimentation to try to do that. But that was what they really wanted. Transvestites are men who enjoy getting dressed up as women. Now, they like their penises, and they aren't actually women, and they know it. But they find sexual gratification, and in fact, they're known to, you know, masturbate while dressed in women's clothes. And very often, they steal their mothers, their sisters, their wives' stuff, so that they can do this. Now, they are been shamed historically, and because they're an affront to masculinity in a lot of ways. It's not that they're women. It's that they're turned on by the idea of themselves being used and penetrated like a woman. That's what it is for them. It's almost a sexual objectification of the self as woman. That's what they're up to. So obviously that is not a sexy, you know, healthy sexual approach to life. It's not going to lead to wonderful, fulfilling relationships. That's why it was considered a mental illness. The last revision.
When did we stop thinking it was a mental illness?
Oh, they've been at this since about the 90s. They've been pushing this pretty hard since about the 90s. And, you know, you mentioned that you thought things were great for women. Yeah, you and I are women of an age that were younger women in the 90s when it truly was great. That was the pinnacle point of achieving rights for women. It really was, like in courts, in employment law, in... It was just amazing. It was growing up,
like we had Title IX, so we had girls' sports. So we got, you know, not too long before we were in school, you didn't have a girls' program. I mean, if you did, it was tennis or something, but you didn't have a basketball program. You didn't have and you didn't have away games because you couldn't get the bus. You didn't have any budget for women's sports, and that ended. And we kind of, hey, like we can finally, because I was an athlete, so that was cool. But now you got to let boys on your team. They kick your rear end all over the court and steal your scholarship.
If you say that you're not okay with this as a female athlete, you're a bigot. You are forced to forfeit your matches. You are kicked off the team. So you're right. What started happening was it started invading at the fringes, and if you weren't around in the fringes, you didn't notice. So if you weren't on lesbian dating apps, you didn't notice, you know, this preponderance of men showing up pretending to be women. And why would it be? Trans
scary sounds.
Trans websites are actually straight. We call them spicy straight, right? They're straight.
I've explained about the spicy straights many times, and Ian, it's really funny because at first people look at you like, what? And then they're like, So, yeah, that's catching on. We're promoting.
Right? Remember, LGB is all about a different sexual orientation. You are same-sex attracted. You are not attracted to the opposite sex, right? So trans, usually if you're a male pretending to be a female, you actually really still like your penis and you like to have sex with women. So you're not going to go date straight women because they're not looking to date a guy dressed up as a girl. You think, you know, your target market is now lesbians. Because you're going to pretend that you're a woman and then sleep with another woman. Of course, lesbians don't actually like any of this. And they're like, no, I really like women. You're misunderstanding it. And that's
Yeah, it's not the dress I was really into. Yeah. It wasn't really the outfit. The outfit wasn't what was working for me.
No. While a lot of us were not looking, the advocates gained the ears of a lot of lawmakers in states and in Congress and started changing the rules. These were not subject to public hearings. We often didn't know about them until after it had happened, right? But Title IX is one of the key ones that you're correct. It gave girls equal opportunity at school and in sports to boys, and that this is a condition of receiving federal funding. The Biden administration rewrote Title IX and published it in April of this year, and it basically had said any boy who wants to play on your team, he's allowed to, and it favored gender ideology or this idea that you could be the opposite sex over actual. So if a girl said, I don't want that guy changing in my locker room with me, and I know he says he's a woman, and that was all that was needed, by the way. They lowered the threshold. No procedures, no medicine. Just say you're a woman. Just say you are. It's good enough that you feel like a woman. And so that's enough. And so any guy, you know, is like, hey, I'm number 400 in the men's sports category, but I could be number one in the girls. Hey, I feel like a woman. And so he goes into the girls' locker room, gets on their sports team, starts kicking their butts in competition. Any girl who protests this is now guilty of sexual discrimination under the Biden administration rewrite. Can you believe that?
That's just insane.
Yeah, and that's not a... And again, back to something that you could control, but the girls can't.
No.
The girls can't control it.
No, and certain coaches... Again, the men were not affected by this. You brought this up earlier. You know, why is it, you know, why are the feminists screaming but not the men? Because the men were not affected by this. It was all the women. You know, it was their spaces that got invaded, their bathrooms. And, of course, in California, we passed the infamous Senate Bill 132. Our favorite friend, Scott Wiener of San Francisco, pushed that one forward. And it was called the Transgender Respect and Recognition Act. And it basically said to any male inmate, oh, not liking it over there in the men's prison? Just say you feel like a woman. Transfer over to the woman. Serve out your term there. And we have had hundreds of prisoners transfer up. Can you believe we did this?
That's crazy.
Well, I think a lot of that is just more of the progressive ideology, and I hope in the next couple of years we start seeing a lot of that being reversed and stopped, because I think public opinion has pretty much had it with the ridiculousness of so much of this, that it's got to reverse. And the same with the women's sports. I mean, I know they're starting to get a little bit more pushback on that. Do you think we're going to see a change there?
I do, because the Biden administration already withdrew their Title IX updates. That was another big thing that happened in December. They published them in April. They got something like 250,000 public comments. So you could imagine 250,000 Americans felt the need to go weigh in on this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And submit a comment through the public, you know, portal, right? And so we pulled a bunch of those comments and started looking at them, and they were overwhelmingly negative. But how did the Department of Education frame it for the news media? Oh, it's just a couple of grandmas complaining. Everybody else loved it.
Yep. Yeah.
Absolutely not true, right? Like, absolutely not true. And there have been fathers showing up at school board meetings and others saying, man, my girl deserves to compete. What are y'all doing?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Everybody knows. You know, so, and almost, you almost, as much as I hate to say this as a feminist, you almost sort of do need the men, the reasonable, real, you know, rational men to start showing up going, this is bollocks and you all know it.
Yep.
You know, this is fake and you know it, right? Because, you know, some of the women, unfortunately, are sympathetic to this. You know, especially if they wanted to feel that their child was special in some way. Oh, I have a trans child, you know, whatever. So some of the women are kind of in on this, but a lot of the men are just like, hate this crap, it doesn't affect me. But when it does affect their daughter, you know, or it does affect, you know, their wife going into a bathroom and sees a man in a dress jacking off in there, they do get mad, you know, and they do get involved. Again, no one's really listening to them. We need a coalition of them, right? We really need a coalition of them to step up. But I agree with you. This is where progressive was. It went too far. I think all of us would have passed by the lone transsexual out there or known the weirdo transvestite. I've been like, whatever, you know, do your thing. Just don't hurt anybody, right? But this, by forcing women to bow down and proclaim that men in dresses are a new species of woman, we went too far.
Yeah.
It just went too bloody far, and people couldn't stomach it.
And I think this is going to be a big issue with the Department of Education, too, and I think they're in trouble, and I think them standing behind this behavior, we could just see the downfall of the Department of Education. I think they may decide, you know what, it's not working, and it's not working, not just on this front, but on other fronts. All it does is service the unions, and it doesn't do anything for the kids, and that's what it was for.
Yeah. Well, at some point, you know, especially with the scholarship thing, I had somebody say, well, who cares? We're just such Puritans. Who cares if there are boys in the girls' locker room? And it's like, okay, we're not talking about everybody's just taking a gander over it, you know, the other equipment. In a lot of cases, like the prison issue that I know we're going to talk about next hour, these men are assaulting women. It's giving them access to prey upon them. So it isn't just, you know, Jimmy's a little light in the loafers and wants to wear a dress, so he's going to hang out in the girls' locker room.
No, and you wouldn't be okay
with... Or go in the ladies' bathroom or whatever.
Well, you wouldn't be okay with your daughter's date showing up with no pants on. Why would you be okay with your daughter having to go in the locker room with a man with no pants on? I mean, it's no different. And that's really got to stop.
Yeah, I don't know. People.
That was their goal, though. The goal was to normalize the fetish
and
make women accept it, right? And again, you didn't see this happening. It's unfortunate. There were some, like, NCAA heads and coaches who also saw opportunity here. They're like, ooh, if I put that boy on the girls' team and just let him pass himself off to the girl, I'm going to break every school.
Yeah. See, that's absolutely it. Because, I mean, I competed at the state level in shot put and discus, but I couldn't do that against boys. I mean, I was really strong, but I was, you know, that doesn't work. Oh, my gosh.
No.
We have to run off and listen to some news, and then we're going to come back with our spicy friend. Sharon Byrne from Wolf, the Women's Liberation Front. You can find us at We the People Radio. We hope you'll go in and listen to all our archives. So it's WeThePeopleRadio.us. That's how it used to be.
I love it to take that long.
I could hear you laughing in the background. And I'm like, remember when that's how it used to work?
That's kind of how it did used to work, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't really all that confusing, was it?
No. And, you know, it's funny. I grew up in the 80s and the 90s, right? And so there was, like, you know, all these big hair bands.
Yeah.
A lot of the guys wore makeup and David Bowie wore platform heels, and you know, and no one for a second thought that they weren't men.
No,
one for a second was confused, right? About
yeah.
What are these, right? No one, it was all gender bending, and it was fun, you know, to break the gender norms, right? But no one was confused, like, is that a woman or a man? No one. Everyone knew.
Well, look at all the different bands we listen to, and you look at some of those guys, you're like, I don't know what's going on there, but I'm sure my dad would have freaked out if he would have known what they looked like.
Right?
He already didn't like the music. Thank God they couldn't see him. Would have been like, okay, that's out. We're not listening to that anymore. But, yeah, all of a sudden now we're forced to play along that this is all okay. And honestly, I don't know. I mean, there's no way that girls are going to, you know, it's funny. Don't you remember, well, I don't know, I guess I was a kid a little bit before you, but when I was a kid, I remember in high school, there were girls who tried to get on the boys' football team. That was kind of a thing. Every now and then, there'd be some girl like, oh, I can be on the wrestling team, or I can be on the football team. It's like, no, you mostly can't. Like, a couple of times, they let them go to tryouts, so they got clobbered, and that was the end of that. But the boys on the girls' team, they beat them pretty much every time, and there's no consideration given to that. And the scholarship folks and all that, it isn't like they're just playing around at the elementary school level. This is all the way up.
It actually is, and you know, you mentioned earlier about Title IX. You know, that was in 1972, bit of regulation that came out after the passage of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And I don't know if you know this, but in the original writing of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, after lots and lots of agitation, right, by black leaders like Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, women were not included in that. They were not included in the 64 Civil Rights Act. And it's interesting, a very sexist senator from Virginia had this brilliant idea of add women to the damn act and it'll fail. Congress will never vote for this thing.
Mm-hmm.
They'll never pass it. that's how we squeaked in. We squeaked in. That's how we got in. And what started Women on the Path to Equality in the United States, which is pretty cool history, but it's very recent, right? Like, this is very recent history. And as we have seen, it can be easily undone. All you got to do is rewrite a few regulations, and you just knock women right out of their own sport, right? And again, it didn't hit the men, because you're right. The girls aren't going to try for the, you know, the basketball competition because they're not as tall.
Well, even if they did, they lose, right? That's why it was so great. What was I, 11, I guess, when they came out with Title IX? So I wasn't even, I was still going to school where, you know, the playground was a parking lot. It was paved, you know, we didn't have actual sports. But when I got to junior high, we had actual sports, and that was all very new. Girls being able to have their own everything. And,
oh, yeah, by the time I got to Georgia Tech in the 90s, right, they had a full-on girls swimming team that I got on, and that didn't exist before, you know. So, like, there were these opportunities that opened up for girls to compete, for girls to learn from doing sports, you know, and even the most powerful female athletes. I mean, Serena Williams, who's got to be possibly the most powerful female athlete, you know, basically said, I don't want to play against a man. That's an entirely different game. You know, it's just everything's different, and all the physiology's different. So you're right. You know, I remember when, I think her name was Danica Patrick, right? She started race car driving, and it was cool to be a lady driver, you know, out there, you know, doing that. I mean, I remember those kind of things, but they were the exception, not the norm. And so, yeah, men's locker rooms didn't get invaded, you know, as a rule. They didn't have to deal with the girl on their team. And even if they did, man, she was easy to knock off, right? I mean, and she didn't get in the boxing ring, you know, with the men, because, again, there's no physical matching there. And so this was, I think, you remember how we said authoritarianism is bad no matter who's doing it, right? The progressive authoritarianism was basically don't believe your eyes, that's a girl, right? Don't believe that just because he's got a penis between his legs, that's a girl.
And you must and you must recognize that, because that's the thing now. They have to, is it in England where they have to call him she?
Oh, my dear, we have got to do some catching up.
Yeah, that, it is England though, right?
Yeah, I would like to remind everyone on this radio show that we did go to war with England, and my parents are British, so, you know, I'm a bit torn here in loyalty, but we did go to war as Americans with the British, and one of the reasons we went to war is no freedom of speech. If you said the king was mad as a hatter, you got hanged for it, right? England still does not have freedom of speech. So, yes, if they're mandated in court to call their rapist a she and tell everybody that she was raped by her sheeness, right, they have to do that. They can't object. They can't fight it. Now, you would think to yourself, with First Amendment rights in this country, that's not going to happen. You can't compel thought here. The Supreme Court will not allow it, right? They'll strike down anything that does try to compel thought. Well, 2 weeks ago in California, we listened in on the hearing for Tremaine Carroll's trial setting. Tremaine Carroll transferred in as a giant male in 2021 to the women's prison up north in Chowchilla, where he proceeded to rape women in that facility. The district attorney, Sally Marino, who's a kick-ass woman, of Madera County, is bringing charges against him. The attorney leading the case is Eric G. Temple. He'd be a good one to have on your show, as would she. And the California court judge, Kathleen Rigby, ruled 2 weeks ago that Mr. G. Temple, the district attorney, absolutely has to refer to Tremaine Carroll as a she, her, during this trial. I couldn't believe it. It is actually happening
crazy
in the United States now.
So we're doing it, too.
Yes, we are.
Now,
I believe Mr. DuTemple, the DA, has some appeal rule, you know, room here. I believe that, you know, he could go further with his appeals than he has. But, you know, this would be a free speech test, right? Now, I believe that certain things might apply to a public servant and a public office, you know, that where they can be compelled by the court to speak a certain way. But are we going to compel the witnesses and the people who were raped, the women who were raped, are we going to compel them to refer to Mr. Carroll as a she as well? And the judge did not give a clear answer on this.
And is, I mean, is it, it's a crime. I mean, is it considered a crime?
To have raped a woman in a woman's prison? Yes.
Okay, so we're not pretending that it's not, that it didn't happen or it's not a crime. We're actually, it's actually being prosecuted as a crime?
It is. They have brought, the DA has brought two charges of rape, and when I talked to her, she said, I got a solidly provable case, Sharon. I said, I'm really happy to hear that. But even she is, like, stunned. that, you know, the judge would rule this way. Now, this is a California judge, because rape is a state crime, right? So we're in a California court system here. We're not in the U.S. court system. But you probably have become aware of Representative Nancy Mace, who has suddenly become a TERF, and I will give you a quick test. How to know if you're a TERF. So do you believe that men are women?
Yeah, no. Bill, you have to answer too.
No. No, I'm pretty clear on that.
That would make you a trans exclusionary radical feminist. In other words, you do not include trans women in your feminism. Because they're men.
Yeah, because they're men.
What an idiot.
Right? How crazy is that?
Right? Your entire listening audience is now TERFs, right? So you're all TERFs. And I would say the British TERFs have been so damn fierce in fighting this. They have fought it in court, in employment law. They are fighting it like tooth and nail. And I honestly thought they were going to turn the corner until Keir Starmer became their prime minister. And now they're all getting knocked backwards, something fierce. With the American election, we do have a chance of turning this, at least at the federal level.
Yeah.
But, of course, all laws are made at the state level. And so you may see blue states like California actually double down and go in even worse than they were going before.
Well, it's funny because who would have thought being a feminist meant, I mean, no one was more surprised than I was when we first started talking a while back, that being a feminist now means you think women are like actually people who grew up as girls and turned into grown-up girls, and they're called women, and they don't have penises. I mean, that's the definition of feminism now. I mean, it used to be like you had to hate men and you had to like all this other stuff.
You're
right?
So close-minded.
Right? And now it's kind of like, wait. So you went to biology in freshman year and you got a passing grade.
Yep. See, radical feminists are radical, and this term doesn't mean like what people called it in the 60s is radical.
Right.
It means more like root feminism, and the root of feminism is women are women and men are not. I mean, that is that. So that's what gets you like trans exclusionary radical feminists, that you will not put trans women in your feminism because you know that they are men. And that, so that makes you all radical feminists, damn it. Who knew?
Isn't that crazy? Because, yeah, I was kind of laughing. I called our show today, Let's Take the T Out of Winty Winty 5, so, you know, 2025. because it's like, we got to get the T off this thing. I mean, I remember when you first told us, you know, like lesbians are lesbians because they want to sleep with women, and men are gay, and women are never gay, only men are gay, and they want to speak with men or sleep with men because they know what men are, and then bisexuals just want to sleep with everybody, and then all of a sudden you have men dressing as women who want to sleep with women, but they're still men, so really they're not different. They're just dressing.
Well, the whole idea that they've recognized this as a real thing is mind-boggling. Let me ask you this. The feller that raped these women in prison, is he still in the women's prison?
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask that, too.
Isn't that interesting that, and again, I'll tell you a little about that law, but basically after he was caught raping those two women, he was sent back to the men's facility in Kern County.
Oh, that's too bad.
Oh,
wow, that's amazing.
Obviously, somebody was a complete bigot.
Somebody was a complete bigot. And the way Senate Bill 132, I went and looked in depth at that law. The way that it was written, all you have to do is say you feel like a woman. That's your qualifier.
Oh.
Now, the state prison really can't turn you down as a man if you want to come in. They really cannot turn you down. And I've heard from female inmates in the South Hill facility that the men transferring in aren't even bothering to pretend to be transgender. They're not putting on any makeup. They're like full MAs with tattoos and everything, right? Like they're just full on men. They're not even pretending to try to be women. But they're telling the prison staff that they are women, and the prison staff has a narrow ability to turn somebody down. Now, Tremaine Carroll had been convicted for a sex offense before. You would think that that would be the primary criteria for turning someone down. It is not. And the inmate gets something like 8 chances of appealing if he gets turned down. So let's say he gets turned down. He gets like 8 rounds of appeals where he can continue to try to press his case and come up with new stuff. So the prison has very limited ability under this law. And Scott Wiener wrote it deliberately that way. The prison Department of Corrections of California has very little ability to turn someone down.
So this was a Scott Wiener bill?
Of course.
And so, you know, let's just we'll just swerve into the political lane for 5 seconds. So for all those people out there that are like, Nancy Pelosi's horrible, I can't believe she's still in office, you better be really excited that she ran again and got elected, because Scott Wiener is the heir apparent to that seat. So,
yes, he's the devil. He is terrible with housing. He is terrible with the transgender stuff. He lowered the age of consent so that men could have sex with boys and not be prosecuted. He is the devil. He is absolutely the devil in California, and people just do not see it.
I think these women that were raped in prison should have some pretty good grounds for a lawsuit against the state of California for putting them in that position to begin with. And maybe if they did sue the state of California and win some big awards, they would think twice before they put a man in a woman's prison again. Do you think that's ever going to happen?
Well, let's cliffhanger that one. Let's take a really quick break, because that's going to be a longer answer. We're going to come back and find out about that, because honestly, Bill, just a little spoiler alert, Bill was just using common sense right there. So,
hey, don't out me.
So we're going to have to take a break so we can all ponder that. Since it's in short supply these days. You are listening to We the People. Our guest is Sharon Byrne, and we will be right back with you at wethepeopleradio.us.
TSVMCG.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. Without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much. Does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy? Possibly.
there's your British mind bender for you, Sharon.
Work that in there. That's right. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Some band called Blur, B-L-U-R. I had to look at the like, you know, the words. I'm like, they're doing what?
You know, I actually think I used to like them, and I loved that song.
Well, I'm happy I could find that for you. So, back to the
lawsuit for state of California. I would pay to see that happen. They need to sue them. That's just nuts.
Wow.
He's thinking absolutely logically, and we have filed such a lawsuit against the state on behalf of 4 female inmates.
Nice.
The lawsuit is called Chandler versus McComber, and last July, our suit came forward in the, we filed it in the California Eastern District Federal Court. And the judge, female, sounding very much like Rigby, dismissed our lawsuit and said that our fears of rape were overstated.
Ugh.
And she did that on the Tuesday in July. And on the Friday, I was at Tremaine Carroll's opening hearing, charged with 2 counts of rape inside the women's facility. The judge, when she dismissed our lawsuit, also granted, even though the state had not asked for it, she granted the state and the California Department of Corrections immunity from future lawsuits. So we've refiled. We've refiled, and we have new plaintiffs, and we welcome all support for that lawsuit because, yes, we would very much like to get this awful law overturned. And protect the women that are in prison. We've got a wonderful friend you should have her on your show one day. Amy Ichikawa, she runs Woman to Woman. She talks she helps us interface a lot with the inmates. She's a former inmate herself, and she has started Woman to Woman as a nonprofit to work with females in the criminal justice system. And it is interesting when I talk to people who work with prisoners, they say that when you rehabilitate men in prison, you know, you really are trying to teach them to find a way to not use violence as your first route to problem solving, right? Like, you know, you need to learn diplomacy. You need to learn to talk. You know, you need to learn other routes than violence. When you're rehabilitating women, what you're teaching them to do is establish borders and boundaries, because typically what got them into the criminal justice system is they got violated enough. They got abused enough. They got trafficked enough. Whatever that happened to them, where they couldn't say no, they couldn't defend themselves, they couldn't establish proper boundaries, and finally they lashed out, and that's what gets them criminally justice involved. And so what you have to do with women is you have to train them on how to take care of themselves, put themselves first, establish proper boundaries, learn to say no. You know, it's a very different rehabilitation. So the idea that you would then stick a man, particularly one who's convicted of sexual offenses, in a prison with women, and by the way, he's not the only one. They put Dana Rivers also in the women's prison, and Dana Rivers murdered a lesbian couple and their son.
Oh.
And he's in there, too, right?
Is so, he pretending to be a woman, too?
He is.
Oh.
It is absolutely heinous. This was a big scandal in the U.K., too. I'm sure you know. Scotland was really famous for this crap. Had put in a guy, you know, that pretended, as soon as he got arrested, basically declared himself a woman, because, again, the law is called self-ID, and it basically is you just ID that way. You just identify that way.
Huh.
And then you are. Then you are. So I identify as President of the United States. I would like for you to acknowledge me as President of the United States. Under the law, I'm entitled to have my identity, and you have to respect it. That's basically the way these self-ID laws work.
That's just crazy. So how many instances of women wanting to be on the men's prison because they think that
almost,
they're men?
Yeah, like none.
Like zero.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For an obvious, again, you're not seeing this happen. The men's spaces are not the ones getting infringed. And some men who are very grumpy about feminism say, well, there are no men's spaces left. Well, I don't know. You still have your own gym locker room. You still have your own boys' bathroom. Typically, especially in California, when they start turning bathrooms all gender, guess which one they pick to be all gender?
Yeah, it's always girls.
Well, the women's
right?
room.
There's always a men's room. There's always a men's room. But the women's room is now everybody and their brother, right? Why? And it's because women are always expected to accommodate. The trans movement relied on that. They relied on women's natural, you know, kind of inclination to be inclusive and to, you know, be kind, and to be accommodating. They actually relied on it and then ran roughshod over it, right? They were like, you will bow down and accept us. So it's interesting. I'm reading a thing from X right now, and it's a guy who applied to work at Claire's. Do you know what Claire's is?
Claire's a
is that the place
clothing?
In the mall that sells, like, headbands and jewelry and stuff?
That's the one, right?
Oh, okay.
Market is teen girls, right? That, you know, they want all these 8 gazillion little accessories, right? So there's like racks and racks of necklaces and earrings and all, you know, it's all girls' accessories, but their target market is teens. And so this guy is so pissed off. He's in Britain and he's so mad, and he said he went for a job interview at Claire's, but he got turned down because of his gender identity. And the woman who was going to hire him said, oh, you know, we didn't realize you weren't a woman. And he said, well, I identify as a woman. And she said, yeah, you know, no hard feelings, but we're going to go with someone else. And he said, I'm already having a hard enough time finding jobs. So I was really hoping I get this one because it'd be a really cool spot to work at, you know, but this place is clearly transphobic. That's what they do.
Yeah, that's the ace card right there. That'll get you the job.
Yeah.
Well, and this is how you always know that they're men, because when you tell them no, they throw a freaking hissy fit, right?
Yeah, wow. Yeah, because girls quit having tantrums a long time ago because it's unbecoming.
Yes, but men love throwing mantrums when you say no, especially when it's a woman who says no, right? They throw an absolute mantrum, which is like, yep, there it is, you're a man. That's all we needed to know.
Oh, my God.
That is just terrifying.
It is. And, you know, I was thinking about circling back to the women's sports issue for a second.
Mm-hmm.
You should go look at C1.org, and it will show you all the medals that were taken from women, from men competing in women's sports. They've kept track of them all around the world, and it's really hideous to look at. I mean, it's just hideous. That, you know, people say, well, it's just one-off, and, you know, getting rid of the trans kid isn't going to make your daughter come in, you know, more than 12th place. And it's like, you know, now she'd be in 11th, and she wouldn't have to compete against that. But basically, 742 female athletes lost out on 1,000 medals to men in women's sports. And it's all across the country, all across the country. But it's also in, you know, other countries as well. But the predominant place where it happens is here.
See, and I guess another thing is I don't understand how a man can feel good about winning a medal that he got competing against women.
Yeah.
And then, you know, holding up his medal like, oh, I'm such an achiever. No. No, you're not. And I just can't believe people aren't just rising up and stopping this. It's insane.
It's really, again, it's a fragmented kind of landscape, which is part of the problem. You know, like I've seen some dads showing up at school board meetings mad about this now. I've seen some young women at school board meetings asking school administrators, like, this has been happening a lot down in L.A., right? So, like, the Riverside Unified School District has really been caught in turmoil over this. They've had a couple of attacks in the girls' bathrooms. There's the two girls decided to wear Save Women's Sports, you know, shirts to school. They got dress coded, sent home, you know, and this has, like, caused a furor, and they're upset because there's a male on the track team with them that's pretending to be a girl. The girls at San Jose State University are suing the NCAA, right, because they're letting this male player on the damn team, right? And he could spike way harder than everybody else, causes physical injuries. And I'm with you. I don't get where the pride is in this for the men, but I've also seen it in an event in England called Park Run that is for women. And there are now men LARPing in there wearing sports bras and winning every damn weekend. And Park Run is not doing a thing to stop it. You know, nothing, because they're terrified that if they do, because that's the other thing, in some communities, if you do push back on this kind of thing, you get swarmed, right? The trans activists will come and swarm you. They will. There was a women's shelter in the UK that declined to admit men pretending to be women, and their whole building was defaced, and dead rats were thrown up on their doorstep, and their funding was stripped.
Yikes.
So the penalties for this, you know, in some places are quite high. You know, there's a bookseller in Ohio that just does not believe in this crap. And her store has been regularly defaced. She's had bricks thrown through the windows. You know, people have written horrible reviews about her online just to make sure people don't go there. You know, so the penalty for this can be quite socially steep, you know, depending where you are. Then in the United States, you can lose your job. One of the rewrites, again, this would have been an interesting talk to have with somebody from your area that's got, like, chamber, you know, background, right, chamber of commerce background. One of the rewrites the Biden administration did this year, and I don't think they've withdrawn it, was they rewrote Title VII. So Title VII is what covers employment law in the United States. And some of the rewrites were so awful. I mean, they were things like, you now have to let men into the women's bathrooms at work. You cannot keep them out. And if one of your employees has posted something on social media that's, you know, basically anti-transgender, the transgender employee in your workplace can now declare a hostile work environment, and you could be fined by the EEOC. Even if the employee that posted it wasn't referring to that transgender employee or even your business. So the business owner now has to police his employees.
On their free time.
Media. Yeah, and his customers, by the way, because if his customers misgender, you know, someone, well, that can get you an EEOC fine, too. So this was an unreasonable expectation to put, particularly on the small, you know, the big guys, they're going to have their own, like, DEI department that's going to arm them to the teeth for this, right? But what is the little 50-person business going to do, right? Like, they don't have access to that kind
of resources. Well, how do you control what your customers say?
You can't, but the EEOC rules say that you must. So, I mean, this was really egregious. Really, as soon as I saw it, I called a bunch of the chambers of commerce that I know, right? And was like, have you read this? You know, do you know what it's going to do, you know, to some of your small businesses? And they were horrified, but they didn't know how to fight it. So that one, that update in the Biden administration, I'm confident you know, that it will get undone in the Trump administration. But unlike the Title IX, it hasn't yet been withdrawn by the Biden administration. And it also had a ton of comments, particularly from small business owners, who are like, what the hell am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
10 attorneys general from 10 different states weighed in on it, said you cannot ask businesses to police their customer speech. You can't.
No.
You know, and the EEOC said, yes, we can, and we will, and you can be fined. So, I mean, we really went very authoritarian on this. And I think it was terrible. It was bad thinking anyway. But to double down and go so authoritarian on it was just awful. And to, you know, really punish business owners. So, you know, during the election, the Trump campaign team ran, you know, ads highlighting this kind of garbage in the swing states heavily. We wouldn't have seen such ads in California because they didn't place them in this market. But they placed them heavily in, like, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, right? You know, like the true battleground states. And I do think it had a deciding effect. I do think it did.
Yeah.
You know, particularly the states that swing, right? Because states like Virginia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, you know, they have flipped before, right? And so, and sometimes they have divided governments where the, you know, governor's Democrat and the legislature is Republican, right? And I think they worked. I mean, I think they really worked to wake up kind of a common person to, what is this garbage, right? And why are we doing this? So it was very effective, I think, in this campaign cycle. And I'm in a way, I'm glad they did it. My worries are that, as with too much progressivism, if you go in the opposite direction, you could go too far there too, right? So that's there's some concern there because Project 2025, which everybody says, oh, no, he's not using that. Well, they're already talking about a few things that are in the Project 2025 playbook, so don't underestimate that. But one of the things it wants to do is eradicate LGB completely. And I don't think you can do that.
I don't think they'll be able to do that, but when you start getting into things like, I mean, policing the speech of your customers that come in and holding businesses accountable for that, cutting body parts off of small children without some of their parent, you know, one of the parents being involved, letting people be victimized, you know, in prison or other, well, especially prison, you think about it, like girls' locker rooms, not a fan of being victimized there at all. However, you don't have to go in the girls' locker room. I mean, you're not made to go in there necessarily. You are for gym and stuff like that if they still do that. But prison, you're trapped. Like, you're trapped.
You literally have nowhere to go.
No.
You literally go to get away from somebody like this. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think prison was an egregious human rights abuse.
That's just crazy. You're trapped in there. I mean, that'd be like having predators as guards, and you have no standards for those people. They can do whatever they want to the prisoners. I think we went through that phase at some point, and I think they still do that in foreign countries, which is why we don't go there and commit crimes. I think Turkish prisons still have the bad rap of isn't that the one we all fear? But
you know, ours aren't much better, though. I don't know if you remember this, but in July, I think it was March of this year, a federal judge ordered the shutdown of the Dublin Federal Women's Prison here in California because they could not stop the guard rape gang that was going on. They could not stop it. They'd been trying repeatedly and couldn't get it done. So they actually shut the damn prison down and relocated all those women to other prisons.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't stop the guards from the rape gang.
Well, and like up here in Northern California, you don't have enough guards to have a gang because there aren't enough. I mean, you've got one guy for every 128 inmates in a wing. And at some points in time when they're out in, quote, recreation, so they could be inside, outside, both inside and outside, all over the place, 600 guys and one correctional officer.
Yeah. Agreed. And, you know, circling back, you know, I was remembering that, you know, the 90s was kind of this zenith of women's rights. It was Beijing Declaration that women's rights are human rights. And, you know, it was just an amazing time. And a lot of that work has been undone. It's been very disheartening. As a feminist, a lot of times people would say, well, you're a feminist, so you must just hate the right. And it's like, well, I'm not thrilled, you know, with the idea of criminalizing women for reproductive choices. But we're also getting very strongly assaulted from the left. You know, when the left will just say, no, I'm sorry, men are now women and you have to accept them and center them in your feminism. When you can't define what a woman is, you can't defend their rights. So this is really problematic for a lot of us of like, oh, my God, we have, like, no friends, right? I mean, you know, this is,
yeah.
You know, this is, like, the worst of the world of, you know, if you how do you stop an American Taliban from happening if you can't define women? There's no rights for those creatures, right? So, like, that is terrifying. So for us, you know, it's been very upsetting, you know, where, I, again, like you and I both have mentioned, you know, when I was in my 20s and early 30s, women's rights was just common and accepted, and it was just not even a, it was a no-brainer. I mean, did we end rape? No. You know, there was a few things I would have liked to have gotten rid of that we didn't. But, you know, now we've actually gone very far backwards, and part of the rampant misogyny that you see coming up in a lot of places is actually coming out of this transgenderism movement. And well, it is really terrifying.
Well, the Lier, Keith, for people who are interested in kind of the background on some of this, we've done some other shows, and there's a tab on the website that says transgender. I would go listen to some of that, because honestly, people who were solidly on the, you know, the progressive team, if you will, are heavily victimized by these folks who now have taken it all too far. And anybody who says, wait, I think that might be too far, well, now you are demonized because it's gone crazy. And we have to take a little break. But I have found a fun song about craziness from our past that you'll enjoy. So welcome to a little Joni Mitchell. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Nice job, Bill.
Thanks.
My analyst told me that I was right out of my head. The way he described it, he said I'd be better dead than alive. I didn't listen to his jive. I knew all along that he was all wrong. And I knew that he thought I was crazy, but I'm not, don't know. My analyst told me that I was right out of my head. He said I'd need treatment, but I'm not that easily led. He said I was the type that was most inclined when out of his sight to be out of my mind. And he thought I was nuts, no more ifs, or ands, or buts. They say as a child I appeared a little bit wild with all my crazy ideas, but I knew what was happening, I knew I was a genius. What's so strange when you know that you're a wizard at three? I knew that this was meant to be.
Ow! Who said I see walking in these woods? Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood. Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You sure are looking good. You're everything a big bad wolf could want.
Listen to me,
Little Red Riding Hood. I don't think.
Yeah, we can use that for the part of the movie about the prisons. So Sharon, do you think this year will be a bit of a turning point? Because it kind of feels like people have sort of hit the wall on it.
I do. And, you know, I actually see some opportunities in this year about which I'm really grateful. And from a high-level perspective on feminism, I will tell you one of the opportunities, which you'd be laughing like, really, in a conservative administration, you see opportunities. I do. One of the opportunities I see is scourge that I would love to see ended, in which California is the largest offender by far, and that is human trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the president, Trump, was very strong in his first term on this and signed some legislation around it, so I would like to make inroads to that, because as long as we have the ability to sell people, and particularly women, into sexual slavery, we are not free. And so I would like very much to see that ended. So I see an opportunity there. I see an opportunity also to make headway on porn. And this is interesting. There could be a whole show about this, Aaron, I swear. We should call up some of these women to do it. I'm meeting a lot of Republican female legislators in various states, and it's interesting to see them taking the front lines of women's rights. But they are doing it in a way that would maybe be unexpected. And one of the ways is that they have passed age verification legislation, which I helped pass it as well with them, in 17 different states. And one of those is now under a Supreme Court challenge to be heard January 15th, and is Texas's law. And this is not a crazy law. This basically says if you're going to go look at porn, I mean, any 11-year-old with an iPad right now can go look at any rape video, human trafficking video, sexual assault, child assault video, and no one will verify his age. The tech platforms will not do it. One of the worst offenders of this is Pornhub. And they have hundreds of rape videos up, and police have called them, and said, please take them down. And you know, we're trying to actually prosecute this case. And they might take it down. See, they got one guy in customer support that might take it down. And then it appears five times somewhere else, right? So, like, it, porn has really gone into a dimension of horror. And, you know, these age verification laws require you to prove that you're 18 before accessing the content. I don't know what the Supreme Court's going to do with this. I don't know if they're going to overturn it or if they're going to say, nope, the state of Texas has a vested interest in protecting minors. It's within its constitutional rights to do this. And, you know, porn is not protected speech that, you know, any 11-year-old should be able to see, right? So we'll see. I mean, there are some opportunities I see. And mostly what I'm seeing is Republican women in the state legislatures carrying these bills, which I find interesting. That this is a breed I've not seen this many of before. And there just haven't been this many of them elected, I don't think, you know, in Republican legislatures. And they tend to be rugged, tough, more Gen X-y. And, you know, they are pretty much holding the line is what I would call it on women's rights. Nancy Mace in the U.S. House of Representatives is similarly, you know, passing quite, she's looking to propose a lot of legislation to stop this kind of stuff in the U.S. federal women's prisons, right, in Title IX and other things. So, you know, we're looking at her as a very solid ally for 2025. And then I do think that, you know, Trump pledged on the campaign trail, and I hope he sticks to it, to just stop the surgeries and the procedures on the minors that, you know, okay, if you're an adult and you want to go butcher yourself, okay, whatever. But, you know, if you're a minor, man, you know, this isn't like getting a new pair of shoes and deciding you don't like them and trading them in for a different pair of shoes, right? Like, this,
yeah,
is, this is really very dangerous kind of stuff, and I'm not even going to call it medicine, right? These are just for-profit, you know, medicalization, and unfortunately some insurance companies are being forced to pay for it, right? But they don't provide detransition coverage. Isn't that interesting? You know, so you can go one way, but you can't get out of it. So, you know, I do see some opportunities in 2025 to really turn some of this around. There are some things happening in some of the state legislatures that frighten me. Wyoming floated a bill to try to make it a felony for a woman to leave her husband and no-fault divorce. And, you know, Texas and Oklahoma both tried to float bills to surveil women. And I don't like any of that. You know, to me, that sounds very, that's not, again, I told you, authoritarianism is not good, no matter who's doing it, right? It's not good.
No, it's always bad. And, you know, but it kind of cracks me up because the left was always such big, you know, they were always such big pals with the ACLU and all that, and it was all about, you know, protected speech and all of that. And now it seems like they're constantly on the wrong team.
I think that's been the shock for a lot of you know, there are a lot of progressives that do end up at the Women's Liberation Front's door. And they are usually, you know, full of PTSD, war-torn, and really upset of, like, when did my party turn on me, right? Like, when did my party become the party of hating women, you know, instead of protecting our rights, right? And so I agree with you on that. I think that is part of, we're watching parties who used to have the plot firmly in hand, and they have lost their minds, and the ACLU is one of them. They have absolutely lost their minds. They've stopped defending civil liberties, and they are on the trans train, as is the National Organization for Women, as is Planned Parenthood. I mean, people and organizations that we would have thought would have traditionally had women's back have, you know, I have a friend that runs the Planned Parenthood here in Santa Barbara County, and I talked to her, and I said, you know, I can't believe you're sending me mail asking me for donations, and you won't use the word woman one time. You're referring to us as people with a capacity for pregnancy.
Are you kidding?
People who chest feed.
Do they really do that?
They really did. They said people who chest feed, people who menstruate. Who would those people be, right? Like, there's only one people that does that.
Yeah, women. Right.
But they were so afraid of not being seen as inclusive. I dealt with an abortion provider in New Mexico, and they introduced themselves as, you know, she, hers, and I said, well, you know, since we're, you know, in a private session here, I'm just going to tell you right now, we don't believe in that crap. You know, you don't have to justify your trans inclusivity to us. We are here in the fight for women's rights, and so that is not what we're up to here. And there was this kind of pregnant pause, you know, and they all kind of
sucked in their breath. Can you even have a pregnant pause anymore?
Right? You know, they sucked in their breath, and then they said, you know, Sharon, they want us to take the word woman out of our name. Who are we if we are not helping women? and they won't let us use the word in our name. And I was like, then you have to stand your ground. You have to stand your ground.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So yeah. There's been a lot of that where the players have lost some of the respectable words. You know who's another one that I used to really be a big fan of was Amnesty International. And those stupid idiots put up a Twitter post basically saying, you know, women in Afghanistan are losing their rights because they identify as women. Oh, what? Like, you think the Taliban would let them identify as something else and keep all their rights?
What?
Have you lost your mind?
That doesn't, right? That doesn't even make sense.
It doesn't make sense, right? So it just is, it's so twisted and so warped, and it just shows you the power of, you know, sort of taken from the Maoist playbook, right, of how you could just warp people's minds and make them speak untruth. It also makes me feel like the zombie movies got it all wrong. These are not the, you know, undead that come and eat your flesh. These are people who have vacated their minds.
Yeah.
They're not in there.
Yeah, they've convinced themselves that these things make sense, even though they don't. Yeah, and then you victimize everybody. You know, you tell them that you're going to come after you. So if you guys aren't the Women's Liberation Front, what are you going to be? The They Liberation Front? Do you get to be they?
Right? I mean, just to show you how awful it has gotten, back in 2017, I will admit, I was one of those people who was very depressed that Trump was going to take the White House. And so I watched the inauguration. I made my daughter get out of bed, who was similarly upset, and watch the inauguration. She's like, why did you make me do this? And I said, because it was a transfer of power in the most powerful country in the United States, part of history. You have to be present. You can't just pretend it's not happening. And then the next day we got in the car and we went down to L.A. and we joined the Women's March. And it turned out to be a beautiful day, and it was, the women were lovely. The men that were there supporting them were lovely. Nobody burned any cars. Nobody, you know, worked out any windows. Nothing bad happened. It was a very nice day. We all felt, then we realized that women around the world had done it. We didn't know that. We didn't realize that on the way to Los Angeles. But women, and it turned out the one in L.A. was the biggest one in the world. It was 750,000 people. It was amazing. And, you know, this year, the Women's March will be held on January 18th, prior to the inauguration, which will be on January 20th. And they have renamed it to the People's March.
Yep.
It will no longer be the Women's March. It will now be the People's March. And that's sad, because there's International Women's Day is there for a reason. It is that when women get upset, as they have done for over a century now, and they go out and they march, really big things happen. You know, really big changes can happen. And so to strip that and make it now the ubiquitous People's March of anybody with a grievance against Trump to show up, it just loses all of that. So,
well, and the funny part is they have a higher likelihood of getting their rights back under Trump than they... I mean, they lost all of them under Biden. And these guys,
yeah.
These guys
no
were just erasing them one by one by one. Look at the weird luggage stealer with the lipstick. The guy Sam, what's his face with the?
Oh yeah, steals the women's clothing and then
he's the nuclear,
poses for pictures with them.
Nuclear waste guy,
brain trust,
and then Dick Levine, who lobbied the world body on transgender surgeries, WPATH, right? He lobbied them to remove any age restrictions for surgery recommendations for minors, so that he could then pitch their recommendations as the way we should do things in this country. And he's in a dress all day.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
Thank God he'll be out of a job here shortly, I'm sure.
Exactly, right? I mean, there were more than a few times during the Biden administration when we at Women's Liberation Front turned to each other and said, I have never felt as a woman so victimized by my own damn country.
Yeah.
I can't believe this is happening, right? So I am glad to see the sun set on that era.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, in a weird way, I think that the sports thing is pretty... the sports thing, I think, will be ultimately a useful catalyst because that hits such a cross-section of people, and it allows the dads to get involved, and it doesn't involve, you know, doesn't involve sex. I mean, we're not talking about a bunch of medical stuff. We're just talking about fairness.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's the step too far. I think
that's
going to be the one that people say enough's enough, and it's going to crash the whole thing, I hope. But I think there will be some big changes after January 20th on this whole front.
I do too. I just my concern that the states that were already hurtling down this path are now going to double down is not abated. You know, Nancy Mace is introducing a bill to ban men in women's prisons at the federal level, but it would only apply to federal prisons. It doesn't get us out of our problem in California.
Well,
right?
I hope people go. When does your case? Because I was just on your website, and Chandler versus McCumber is right there under legal cases. So if anybody wants to look, it's womensliberationfront.org, and you can just pop on there and look. So it isn't just a, you know, Sharon just doesn't talk about it. She's actually doing stuff.
Amen, sister. And I will tell you that Tremaine Carroll's trial will get underway in January, and we will be there. And we will be protesting, of course, but we have a lot of Northern California supporters that come over to the Madera County Courthouse to help us with that protest. But we want to send a message loud and freaking clear. You know, we put up billboards on Highway 99 to alert Californians that, did you know they're putting the men in the women's prisons and they are raping the women? And we've gotten quite a bit of feedback on that. So, you know, we will not be stopping.
The good part is women's crime is gonna plummet, because anybody who's facing any time in jail in any kind of prison has got to be rethinking. Sharon, we have to run away. It's been lovely chatting with you. We will do it again soon. I already sent you an email about all the new people you're going to send to us.
Yep. So thanks for coming on, Sharon.
Our guest has been Sharon Byrne. We've been chatting with her on WeThePeopleRadio.us.
We ain't gonna-